is the
director of Space Flight Operations Center here. That is the control room.
Bud, will you move in a bit, Bud? Gentlemen, the signs in front here are not correct. All right, will you straighten the signs out, please? Reading from my right here. First of all, Mr. Ray Heacock of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, one of the associate experimenters. Dr. Homer Newell, Associate Director of the Office of Space Sciences and Applications. Bud Schirmeyer, whom you've seen before, as Program Manager for Ranger. Dr. Kuiper, the Principal Experimenter. Dr. Shoemaker, another of the experimenters. And Mr. Whitaker, an additional experimenter. So we have here the experimenters. Dr. Urey, incidentally, is another experimenter, but was not able to be here this evening. So now, I think that I judge that we brought some lantern slides down with you, didn't you? All right. So I think we may just as well go right into showing some of the slides then. I would like now to begin to show some of the slides, and I would like to ask Dr. Kuiper then to comment on these slides as we go along. Dr. Kuiper.
Let's keep the level down,
Dave. I believe, Dr. Pickering, it will be necessary to turn some of the lights out in order to get enough contrast on the screen. These are very much like photographs, and they have to be shown in as near complete darkness as we can have it in order to bring out the details. I think we need more lights off in order to show the photographs to advantage. This is a great day for science, and this is a great day for the United States. What has been achieved today is truly remarkable. We have made progress in resolution of lunar detail, not by a factor 10, as the Ranger pamphlet hoped would be possible with this flight, nor by a factor 100, which would have been already very remarkable, but by a factor of 1,000. This means that the moon, which to the unaided eye, of course, is seen at a distance of about 240,000 miles, and which in a good telescope can be brought to a distance of 500 miles equivalent, has been brought in this experiment, in this Ranger 7 experiment, to a distance of half a mile. This, of course, covers only a small region of the lunar surface, but the sample shown is a very representative sample, and therefore the amount of information that has been gained about the lunar surface is truly remarkable. This first slide shows a frame obtained in the beginning of the sequence with the A camera, one of the six television cameras, and shows a resolution which is very similar to what had previously been obtained from the ground, that is from observatories. So what you see here at the moment is just an ordinary good photograph which might have been obtained in, let us say, with a 100-inch telescope or a 200-inch telescope or any of the other large telescopes. Now, the next slide shows an improvement already by a factor of the order of 5, this then is already very much better than what has been achieved from the ground. And the third slide shows yet another step of a factor 3 to 5, and here we have numerous small craters covering the lunar surface of dimensions which have been totally unobservable in the past. So here we have gained a factor already more than 10. Now the fourth slide goes further and shows a remarkable clustering of very small craters, and this region appears to be somewhat anomalous in the sense that it has been produced by the impact of the very large crater Copernicus, which I'm sure is familiar to many of you. This crater Copernicus, when it formed, tossed out thousands, literally thousands of rock fragments, which made secondary craters on the moon. And what you see here in the center of the picture and a little below it is a nest of these secondary craters. The density of these craters is truly enormous, and this is not representative of the entire lunar surface. And I'm sure that the warning which has been gained here is very important, has an important implication for the future programs, the landing in particular, because obviously regions which are as badly battered as this one ought to be avoided in the program Apollo. The next slide shows yet another factor 10 or so in resolving power.
Okay, go ahead and take
and
it.
Here we see a totally new feature. A large number
go ahead and take this, will you? I don't want to ruin his speech by talking
soft,
over it.
Which have very worn, sort of a worn appearance. The edges are rounded. The edges of the craters are rounded. But you will note that in addition to this large number of soft craters, which have dimensions from about 50 to 300 feet in diameter, you have also a number of very tiny craters. So this shows that the soft appearance of these larger craters is not due to poor focus or motion of the spacecraft or anything like this. The definition of the optics was very good indeed, as you can judge from inspection of the very small craters, which are completely sharp. So we have a large number of very small craters as well. And then there is a feature which is very interesting, the only feature of its kind so far noted on the records which have been obtained today. Incidentally, the number of records obtained was 4,316. So that this gives you an idea of the amount of work that is ahead before the results of this tremendous mission can be fully evaluated and fully announced. On the left side, a little above the center, you see some odd dark dots in the crater, and these dots appear to represent shadows of a rock mass which is apparently buried in this crater. And it stands to reason that what we are looking at here is a secondary crater. That is a crater made by a fragment of, very likely, the large crater Copernicus, which we can still observe in the crater it formed. In other words, this is an enormous fragment, something like 300 feet in length, which was apparently tossed out when Copernicus formed. This is a very preliminary conclusion, mind you, because we scientists have had only a few hours so far to study these records. But this seems to be the first thought that occurs to us as a reasonable explanation of this rather unique feature, or that is really unique as far as we know on these records, of a rough fragment casting sharp shadows in the crater there on the left. I might mention that the sun was 23 degrees above the horizon in the area taken here. So from the known position of the sun above the horizon and the observable shadows, one can derive conclusions on the slopes of these craters, and one finds then that some of these rocks are much steeper than 23 degrees because they cast very distinct shadows. Now, the next frame is taken with the B camera. This is the first of the frames I'm showing you of the B camera. So, I have shown you here a series, I believe, of six frames taken with the A camera. Let me tell you a little bit about this A camera. It has a field of 25 degrees on the side and therefore covers a good size area, good sized area. In fact, the first of these A frames taken cover almost the full width of the moon as seen at last quarter. The B camera has a longer focal length, three times longer focal length, 3 inches versus 1 inch. The sensitive plate, the sensitive area, the vitagon, had the same area as before, a little over a centimeter, that is about 44 hundredths of an inch on the side. And therefore, the because the focal length was longer, the field is correspondingly smaller in degrees, and instead of 25 degrees, we have about an 8-degree field here, 8 degrees by 8 degrees. Now, the crater you see there is the crater Guericke, and it can be observed from the Earth quite well. But the photograph here shows enormously more detail, something like 10 times the resolving power what Earth-based photograph shows. So this already is a very beautiful photograph. And I can assure you, when I had the privilege of seeing these A and B frames today for the first time, of course, the 400 frames, every one, I thought, was a bullseye as far as quality is concerned. I mean, I have never in my experience as a scientist seen a series of scientific documents where not there is just a good selection of good quality pictures among a whole lot of indifferent pictures, but where every picture, literally every picture of the A and B series is of high quality. It is an extraordinary series, and the quality is probably so high in part not only because of the very great care of the staff of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory and the group at Princeton, which was responsible for the production of this RCA, but also the large number of scan lines on the frame, you see. You are not aware that you're looking here at the television picture at all. That is because there are 1,150 lines and not the regular 500 or so lines on the frame. So the lines are so close that it simulates a photograph. Now the next frame carries this another step of a factor 10 farther, and we have again the same picture as we had on the A camera, a mixture of craters that have soft rims, sort of rounded rims, and then also a scattering of small pits which have fairly sharp outlines. So again, the quality of the pictures, the soft quality of some of these craters, rather, is not due to poor optics, but is due to intrinsic properties of these craters themselves. The camera itself has very excellent resolution. The next frame carries it yet another step forward in resolution, and here we have some of the highest resolutions obtained in the present series, where craters down to something like 10 feet and smaller can be observed. The next frame is the, as I remember it, carries this to the greatest refinement. Here again, you see a mixture of craters with soft edges, with soft rims, and a few sharp craters in some very small ones in addition. The last picture, I believe, next. This indeed is the last picture I'm going to show you. Is taken with the P cameras. and a very large number of frames was obtained with the four sets of peak cameras. Well over 900 frames per camera, so a total of something like 3,900 frames for the four P cameras together. So to sum up, there are some 400 frames with the A and B cameras together, an equal number scattered among the A's and the B's. Yes, this was done all under very great pressure, mind you. Everybody has worked at the limit of their strength to get this ready for this conference. But the original Acula shows more clearly than the reproduction here craters down to sizes of 3 feet. And the resolution, the best resolution obtained, is approximately a foot and a half. This is 1,000 times better than the best photographs which were available up to yesterday. 1,000 times better. Now, the frame was not complete. Before the spacecraft had the opportunity to complete the transmission of the data on the Vidicon, the spacecraft hit the moon, was destroyed, and the transmission stopped. So on the right-hand part of the frame here, this noise-looking material, that is simply receiver noise on the Earth, and at that time the spacecraft suddenly stopped transmitting. Below is another frame taken with three times the focal length, the upper one with 1 inch focal length, the lower one with 3 inches focal length. Was taken, however, from an altitude of 3,000 feet instead of 1,000 feet, and therefore the resolution of the two frames is essentially the same. So the lower frame and the upper frame to the left have the same resolution, and the resolution is approximately 3 feet. Dr. Pickering, I think, is the end of my presentation. I don't know, sir, whether you would want to go beyond this as far as I'm concerned, but perhaps I should at this time turn the microphone back to you. Thank
you. That was Dr. R.L. Peacock.
Stand up. Hello? Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I think you must agree that we really do have a remarkable set of pictures. When, as Dr. Kuiper says, it's not a case of picking out an occasional good picture, but every picture that has been looked at so far has been a good picture. Now, I regret that I'm going to have to leave you, Dr. Newell also, and so I would like Mr. Schirmeier to carry on from this point. So I'll turn the microphone over to Mr. Schirmeier.
Thanks very much. I don't think there's much more I can say after that presentation. I guess we might open it for questions at this point.
I wonder if either Dr. Kuiper or Dr. Shoemaker can tell us, on the basis of the quick look the small chance they've had to look so far, what they regard as the single most significant feature from these pictures, scientific feature. Right.
I think that Dr. Shoemaker, as a geologist, ought to co-answer this question. I would like to make a comment or two as an astronomer what struck me. As I have mentioned to my colleagues earlier, from the scientific point of view, the thing that struck me most was that the moon, the region of the moon, or the dimensions which we have been able to observe, which, as I mentioned, go down a factor 1,000 below what had been observable before, that this range, tremendous range of new knowledge, has not resulted in any totally unforeseen problems. The moon has shown, that is, the records show, a continuity of features from the large craters observable with telescopes down to smaller and smaller sizes. I think that the rounded features of the large numbers of secondary craters is new. Also, their large number is new. Dr. Shoemaker has often called attention to the expectation of these large numbers of secondary craters, and I think these records confirm this expectation. It is also clear that primary craters exist, little pits, which have very much the same shape. The shape is the same. They are smaller, but the shape, the form, is the same as the bigger craters. I had myself, frankly, expected something that has not shown up, namely that the lunar surface on the Maria, that is on these lava fields, would have a lot of furrows and cracks, fissures, because in large telescopes one sees an increasingly large number of such cracks on the surface of the moon, in the Maria, in the dark regions. But these records do not show show any large number of such features. There are some ridges shown. These ridges in the Mare are rather of the same nature, the same shape, sort of form, as the larger ridges. So I would say then, in summing up, that the new region of knowledge is, in the true sense, an extension of the earlier knowledge. I think it shows that the craters continue to occur down to sizes of about 3 feet in diameter, about 1 foot depth. This clearly implies that we are not dealing here with enormous layers of dust, of very loose dust, that is, very loose material, where one would not expect any small features to be visible at all. It's not like sand, in other words. And when you have an impact in sand, all you get is just little waves, I mean, soft features. It is not that kind of a thing. Again, I want to say that the method of attack here has been tremendously successful. This program has had great difficulties in the past, but that is because it was a tremendously ambitious program. And I think all of these various difficult things which have been attempted have now been brought to a degree of perfection simultaneously, which has made this experiment really a model experiment for years to come. That every aspect, literally every aspect, from the ballistics, the mid-course maneuver, to the picture taking, everything has behaved according to the textbook, let us say. It was a textbook case, and I'm sure this case is making history. Sure that Dr. Shoemaker would want to add in reply to this question.
I think that Dr. Kuiper has placed his finger on the main highlights of the results. That is, there was nothing very startling beyond what one generally might have anticipated for the small scale features of the moon. Of course, many of us have been trying for a number of years to outguess this moment as to what we would see, and each one of us has been surprised in his own way. I think one of the principal scientific fruits that will come out immediately will be the actual size distribution and spacing of these craters, which actually gives us a record, of a long record, of the flux of small objects in space, which have struck the moon. And we will have a chance to understand this record in much more detail. I myself was a little surprised, and I think this is something new and significant, that even though the craters increased in number very rapidly, as you saw in the slides, as we went down to smaller and smaller features, yet there came a time when you increased the resolution still further, that the pictures no longer looked as rough as they did at intermediate scales. They started to get a little bit smoother again. This is a very significant result, and it's yet perhaps too early to interpret just what it means.
Dr. Shoemaker, on the best earth-based photographs, there are small, white, fluffy objects which don't seem to cast any sharp shadows, but which seem to be rather bright. Are these related to the rounded craters, to the very smooth, soft-looking craters, or have you an idea what these little fluffy objects are?
These little white patches that you refer to are, in fact, the ray systems around small, unresolvable craters. And indeed, one does see the tiny primary craters. They're the sharp craters that are at the centers of these systems rather than the rounded craters.
Does this, the indication of smoothing out on the craters of, or on the rims of the craters, of some of the secondary craters, does this indicate erosion to you? And if so, what kind of erosion is it?
I might be able to speak for a consensus of the experimenters. This is certainly a strong suggestion. However, the secondary craters, the larger ones that we had already been familiar with, that can be seen from the Earth through the telescope, are also rounded in form, and it's not possible to assess accurately yet whether this rounding is a true anomaly of shape, which must be explained by erosion, or whether we're dealing here with a new scale of phenomenon and we do not yet know completely how to interpret it. Certainly, this is one suggestion, and I must confess I lean toward it myself, as I believe Dr. Kuiper does also.
Dr. Shoemaker, what can you tell us about the surface composition, soil characteristics of the moon from what you've seen so far?
Well, as you must appreciate, we've only had a chance to look at this very, very briefly. Certainly, I've had to change my own personal opinion about the model of the lunar surface, the structure of the near surface. I still feel it's probably composed of debris. It's littered with debris. I think the layer must be thinner than I had thought because there are not as many small craters. This is a speculation. We're going to have to do a lot of work. I think there's 3 years of work ahead of each one of us before we really fully get all of the worthwhile scientific information out of these pictures.
What's even harder, soft? What do you think the consensus of the experimenters is about the findings in these pictures so far as they apply to landing men on the moon?
Well, I would like you to refer that one to Dr. Kuiper, who would best represent the group.
I really do not want to pose as an authority on this subject. I think it would be very unfair to you and also to myself and to others who could speak with more authority on this. I think it is obvious that if one wants to land on the moon, you want to land in a place where you're not going to have any accident. And it is also obvious that if you have a very rough terrain with steep mountains or a large number of very deep pits, that is a region to avoid. So I think a consensus had already developed that the maria of the moon, which as seen from a distance look the smoothest areas on the lunar surface, that these by and large would be the best suited to for such landings. But I think the pictures which you have seen and many others which you have not seen, which were of the same general nature, indicate that one region or one type of terrain that one should avoid as poison is these crater rays, which apparently are just completely covered with small impact craters. Now, the slopes of these craters may not be so terribly great. It may be 10 degrees, but still, if you have a landing craft on something that tilts 10 degrees, you're the chances of an accident, I'm sure, would be much greater. So I think one would like to plot these regions where such impacts such numerous secondary craters have formed, and those are probably, as far as one can tell from the first inspection, identical with these regions which one normally has called the crater rays. So around each of these big craters, Tycho, Copernicus, Kepler, and a number of others, you have these white rays seen on ordinary photographs, and these new results indicate that these rays, in fact, were caused not merely by small, fluffy material that was tossed out of the moon, as was often thought in the past, but that this material that was thrown out had some pretty sizable rocks in it, able to make secondary craters in great numbers, and that these areas, by and large, will be rough. So I think very much indeed has been learned from these records and will be learned in the future about areas to avoid in lunar landings and areas which are almost certainly going to be suitable. It is clear that the number of primary craters is quite small, so that one might not have much more than, say, a 1% area covered by primary craters, even down to the scale of 3 feet. And this is a result of tremendous importance, because if you can find, in other words, the areas that are not so covered with secondary craters, then your chances of landing in a reasonably level area are very good indeed, let us say, of the order of 99% or so.
Dr. Kuiper,
in the argument that we've seen here a relatively small number of photographs, is there anything contained in the other photographs which we have not seen, which perhaps could be called to the attention of this group as unusual in any way?
I think an answer to that question as to whether the photographs we have shown you can be considered truly representative, I think the answer is yes, that they are truly representative. There is, among these 4,000-odd pictures, of course, a large amount of duplication, particularly when the camera was at a great distance from the moon and a frame was taken every 2.5 seconds. Well, it was like a zoom lens coming into a target, and a lot of consecutive frames show basically the same thing. So these pictures, while we have some 4,000 pictures here, they can probably be combined into a very much smaller number of basic photographs. I don't know what the number would be, but it might be of the order of 100 or so. There is a great amount of redundancy in it, as the term goes. I think I can say truthfully that what you have seen is a representative sample, quite representative. Of course, there are small differences from place to place everywhere, but there are no phenomena which we have seen drastically different from what you have seen on the other frames.
Dr. Kuiper, relative to the erosion, in the absence of wind and water, what would erode things on the moon? And a related question, would you say that the smooth versus the sharp craters have to do with their age, the sharp ones being more recent than the smooth ones?
Well, if I may, the second question was, or the second part of the question was, whether the smooth craters might be old ones, eroded, and the sharp ones, young ones, not yet eroded. This is a question on which, you recall, Dr. Shoemaker touched.